for 10 years at least. I think this is my 11th. No, it's my 10th because I skipped 1 year. So my 10th New Year retreat. But what's come up in recent years has been kind of through the influence of my own life and seeing that one of the things that people say consistently when they leave a retreat is, how do I keep this practice going when I go home? And the answer is right here for you this evening. You practice. And when the stress and strain of life comes in, it becomes more difficult. It becomes more of a challenge. And so I've incorporated this little kind of wonderful little donut hole in the midst of all of this attention, you know, people answering the telephones for us, people cooking our meals, people making our beds before we got here, all of the care that goes into creating a situation in which we can give ourselves the gift of a retreat is already done. The distractions have been limited. The walls, I made a joke about reading them, but they're wonderfully boring anyway. So even if you do read them, it really isn't going to change, you know, it's not going to quench that craving for some sort of excitement. And we even had that today with our very own tornado warning. So what the heck, we're getting a real ride. But this evening, we're right on the cusp of what is called a self-retreat. But in recent years, I've gotten, you know, little feedback that says, well, I really wanted more structure, so we're going to give you the opportunity to have both. If you wish, you can go and practice in your room. If you know that you have health concerns or issues of energy, go and sleep. There is really not one perfect right answer to this quiz. It is up to you and up to your very own awareness of what it is that you need. If you want to take the opportunity to cultivate this quality of discipline, it's a kind of renunciation. It's interesting, a lot of teachers, when asked to define the word renunciation, they keep coming back to the word generosity. It's a kind of generosity that we offer ourselves to keep offering the gift of this practice to this life. But because some of you have told me that you're new to the practice, that, you know, this is your first retreat, what will happen is I've asked John to lead some sittings, to sit up here and ring the bell, and then he's going to go and do something that we will already be doing. He will go and tune his instrument because he's one of the mysterious musicians for this evening's ceremony. And, you know, Christy may be running around taking care of all the other things. And so for a period of time, you'll have these sittings timed and the bell ring and somebody up here in this spot. And then you won't. And if you so choose to really push, to give yourself the gift of this intention to come in, to keep, you know, building slowly the momentum of this retreat, then you, after you've gotten the training wheel of John, then to just go on your own, to release yourself into your own recognizance, if that makes any sense. So we'll start this self-retreat. It says here 6:30 p.m. is when it starts. And it concludes with a formal sitting at 9:30, I'll come back and we'll have a formal sitting together. And that sitting will be offering a practice that is one of the most powerful practices when things are difficult in life. It's called the equanimity practice. It, like the metta practice, has a certain set of phrases that are offered, because some things in life don't appear to make sense, and yet they've happened. And to apply this practice is extremely powerful. So I want to make sure that you've had that practice introduced to you formally. So we'll do that at 9:30. At 10 o'clock, there'll be a talk about taking refuge, about taking on what are called the five householder trainings or mindfulness trainings or precepts. Whatever word you want to use, you notice my hand's going automatically to this cord on my wrist. It's common to wear a cord to acknowledge that these trainings have been undertaken. And I'll talk more about that. Just because you're present at this retreat does not mean that you have to do that, that you must take on these trainings, that you must take these refuges. That is not what this is about. It's a way to bring the opportunity to you if you wish to partake. And if you don't, it's a way for you to share in this ceremonial as a willing kind of observer and person who is thinking about doing it at some point or even not. So that's completely open. Working with self-retreat, I wanted to read you this story. This is a story that comes from what are said to be this series of tales. They're called Jataka tales. And they're said to be the many, you know, all these stories of the past life of the Buddha. And this one is about a parrot. And the reason I choose it is because it has to do with a very special quality of heart. And that quality is the forming of intention. And seeing how forming intention is almost irrevocably dovetailed with the quality of patience and humility. Both of those are partnering with that word intention. So it's about this little parrot. He lived happily in a beautiful forest. But one day, without warning, lightning struck and burst a tree into flame. But he was only a very little parrot. What could he do? So he flew up into the sky where he could look down, and he saw all his friends in the forest, his animal friends, running for their lives. And something about the fire, the lightning, the forest happened to be very dry, and the rain had not fallen for some time. And this dry lightning had literally created a conflagration, and the animals were running terrified for their lives, and smoke began to billow, and they weren't able to breathe very well. So the parrot could not take just being up in the sky looking down on this difficult circumstance. So she flew to the river, and in order to get there, she had to twist and turn through all these billowing flames and big black smoke coming at her. But she just kept flying, and when she got to the river, she flew down, opened up her bill, and scooped up a bill full of water, and then turned and went back to the fire's heart and dropped these tiny droplets onto the fire. Over and over again, she made this effort. over and over again, she put herself in danger in order to help her friends. And finally, it's funny, in these stories, they always have like a divine element who's looking down. And this Deva, this god, appears to her and says, in the form of an eagle, and says, look, you know, this is really useless. What you're doing, you're never going to change this reality. It's interesting today, listening to our stories, our heart and warrior stories in the discussions today, how many of our minds tell us these things. How many times our minds say, no, you're not going to change reality. Just give up now. That's said to be the near enemy of this quality that I'll teach tonight. The near enemy of equanimity is indifference, giving up, kind of going, oh, well, taking the Eeyore path, you know. So the eagle comes. He says, you're not going to change anything. And the parrot says, I'm not giving up. No matter what, I will continue, because at least I'm trying to help with all my heart. She flies down. She scoops up another bill full of water and drops it on the flames. So I want to find the place in here. Says, back and forth she flew time and time again, from the river to the forest, from the forest to the river. Her feathers became charred, her feet and claws were scorched, her lungs ached, her eyes burned, her mind spun dizzily as a spinning spark. Still, the little parrot flew on. So, a lot of times when we're practicing, that urge toward indifference can come to us. You know, somebody asked today, when spiritual bypassing? You know, how do I fall into spiritual bypassing? This is one of the easiest ways. It's to predict an outcome with the mind and then believe it. To forget that heart and courage do move mountains. So at that moment, some of the gods floating overhead in their cloud palaces of ivory and gold happened to look down and see the parrot flying among the flames. They pointed at her with their perfect hands. Between mouthfuls of honeyed food, they exclaimed, look at that foolish bird. She is trying to put out a raging forest fire with a few sprinkles of water. How absurd. And they laughed. So, you know, the mythopoetic aspect of this, we all have, you know, the Tibetan tradition has been quick to point out that we all have these realms as part of our own mind. So this is yet another part, the realm of the gods. The realm of the gods. Oh, how foolish. That's another voice that comes up inside our head. So what ends up happening, the little parrot continued to fly through the smoke and flame. She could hear the great eagle, who was one of the gods embodied as an eagle. He kept calling out, stop, little parrot, save yourself. But finally, the parrot had enough. Bhante Gunaratna, I told you about him last night. He's a monk in this tradition. He told me that one thing he likes to do is give himself a good talking to every now and then. And this is what this next part of the story reminds me of. You know, it's like a good talking to your own mind. Look, says the parrot, I don't need some great shining eagle to tell me that. My own mother, the dear bird, could have told me the same thing a long time ago. Advice. I don't need advice. I need help. So rising higher, the eagle watched the little parrot flying through the flames. High above, he could see his own kind, the gods still laughing and talking. He grew ashamed of the god's life, and a single desire was kindled in his heart. I wish I could be like the parrot, he said, flying on, brave and alone, risking all to help. What a rare and marvelous thing. Moved by these new feelings, the eagle began to weep. Stream after stream of sparkling tears poured from his eyes. Wave upon wave, they fell, washing down like a torrent of rain upon the fire, upon the forest, upon the animal, and the little parrot herself. Where the tears fell, sparks shrank and died. Smoke still curled from the scorched earth, yet new life was already boldly pushing forth. So you can take this, you know, as it is, or you can take it at the mythopoetic level of when, have you noticed that in the world, when one person begins to press, that what occurs is other people's indifference is pierced. Other people's hearts are opened. My oncologist, when she started this, I think she was 9 years old, 9-year-old daughter at the time, she's now 16, saw that not all children had books to read that were their very own, and that was her greatest joy in life. And so she went door to door on Halloween, trick-or-treating for books. Then it grew into this garage-based 501c3 organization. And now she's shipping books all over the United States, free to any child who asks. How did she do that? She certainly did not do it by herself. She did it through the care and support of thousands and thousands and thousands of people who heard the plea and helped. So the power of intention is the point of the story. To set the intention to just fly over the river of the mind, scoop up water, and drop it on the conditioned tendencies during this self-retreat again and again and again. If you discover that's not what you need, to put yourself to bed, to rest so that you can be energetic and come back at 9:30 to be a part of this wonderful ceremony. Not one is better than the other. Each has its purpose. And it is up to each of you to make the decision on how you are going to play this out. We will toast at 12 midnight. We really are. We're not sneaking and doing things to the clocks. So it will be quite a night. So I will leave you with this. If you wish to take on the self-retreat, then it starts in 11 minutes. If you wish to retreat to your bed, have a nice rest. I'll see you back here at 9:30. And we'll learn the equanimity practice.